Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Supposed to be a joyous return of the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos. That's Bob Mackowitz. But we've had technical issues, which annoys me to no end, mostly because I hate wasting people's time. So now me and Bob have got to do this like it's Live Aid 1985 and we're recording next to George Michael. We are the world because we got to share one goddamn mic. Hi, Bob. How you doing?
He just passed the mic over. I'm good, Matt. Better than you. It's really cute. He did one opening to start and he was all like, hey, everybody, this is so great. Bob and I are back together again and let's talk about our time away. And now the pod's rolling and we love doing it. And then there was about 20 minutes of, okay, talk again. All right, can I get you? All right, just count to four. And we just gave up and decided to share a mic. So what started off so happy turned out really messed up, kind of like my sabbatical year. In a lot of ways.
Well, tell, okay, we got a mic stand here. Okay, I see what Amy's doing. Tell everyone a little bit about it. Because, yeah, you've been away for like 9 months, and it was like supposed to be California and Germany. So what's world traveling Bob been like?
Well, I'll just sum it up this way. We spent a lot of time in California. That was fun. We got back here. We had a trip planned to Japan that for a variety of reasons had to get pulled down. And then we wound up spending a lot of time up north. And now I live in Vaughan. And that's pretty much my last 8 months.
So wait, now were you in Germany?
I have been in Germany, just not recently.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time in the States, actually, Matt. Mm-hmm. Now, how can people still hear us?
Yeah.
You and I are like Springsteen and Little Steven trying to share a mic here. This is adorable. Yeah, I didn't see you for 9 months. Now we're Frenching.
Like literally, yeah. Like this is uncomfortably close between us. Nothing can be done. Okay, so how's Vaughn?
Oh, did you see a thing in the Star a couple months ago about how it was voted the rudest place in Canada?
No. Was it really?
Yeah.
Wait, but they got Canada's Wonderland there. How can they be rude?
And I think that's maybe a carve-out. But it's like everybody there, when you deal with them, it's like they suspect you might be trying to rip them off. Well, there's a kind of a distrust factor.
Really?
Everything. There's kind of a low-level tension to everything. Like there's a scam that you're part of and you're not aware exactly what it is.
That's got to be tiring. Like just living, dealing with that on a day-to-day.
It is, but you know what? It's all good. I want to hear more about your trip because I get back and I'm living in Vaughan on my, upholstered couch. And this is just while my house is being fixed up.
It's
a temporary thing.
Yeah.
But, and then Sandra's like, oh, Matt's on a camel.
That's right.
So please explain.
Well, I was away for 16 days, was in Bordeaux first, ran the Bordeaux Marathon. You run through 22 different vineyards. No one sets a personal best record in terms of time. And then after that, we decided to go to Morocco because Amy and her sister had never been there before. And the video you saw was actually on, it was on a Thursday. And this is important. We were on the camels and we spent the night in the desert. The next day when we drove home from the desert in the Atlas Mountains, we drove back to Marrakesh. At 11 o'clock that night, that is when the earthquake, first earthquake in Morocco in over 60 years, and we were in the middle of it. We got woken, in our room. Just room started to shake for about 20 seconds. And let me tell you, there is nothing, you never feel so helpless as you do in the middle of an earthquake. I can now say this from firsthand experience.
So it wasn't immediately clear what was going on. Was it enough of a shake that you knew, or did you have to figure it out?
The first second you wondered, why is there a train going by? And then you remember there are no trains. You're just surrounded by alleyways and stuff. And then, you knew immediately, oh, this is an earthquake.
It was a really bad thing that happened. Was it hard to get home or how did it, like what happens next?
What happened next was the incredible manager got, we were staying in this Riyadh, which is like a bed and breakfast meets a hotel in Morocco. It's beautiful. And the manager who was calling to find out if his family was alive, still managed to get about, there was 12 of us into this out and there's an alleyway and the right of the alleyway is now blocked because the building next to us has collapsed. Now, I should say that building was under construction. It wasn't like it was a fully formed building, but now one way has been is now a dead end. So you're walking through concrete and rubble. We spent about 5-6 hours in a giant courtyard before we were able to find somewhere to sleep, before it was safe, just because you had to deal with all the structural issues. And we were leaving a day and a half later anyway for the coast. But it was weird because Saturday in Marrakesh is this incredible giant marketplace. But now there's maybe a third of things open. Everything's much quieter. Everything's much more muted. Everyone is hugging. Everyone is asking how everyone's family is doing. We have this level of guilt because we're like, hey, we're tourists, you know. And we, by the way, we've raised money through Amy's charity, Hope for Help. But yeah, it was pretty scary and pretty surreal.
So it sounds like you learned the same thing I did, which is in life, you do your best to make plans. You try to be smart. You try to maximize time and enjoyment out of things. And then you also realize because you have that plan, life still just does what it does.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of try to be smart, try to be true to yourself, and enjoy every sandwich.
And we certainly did there, Warren Zevon. And listen, I'll say this about Morocco.
I'm getting it tattooed on my arm.
Are you?
Enjoy every sandwich.
That if you're going to get a tattoo, that's a pretty good tattoo. Now, is it where is it going to be? Like forearm?
Okay, so I had this long-standing conversation about will I be a tattoo guy? Because, you know, I like punk rock and I like music. I spend a lot of time around tattoo people. So I was thinking on my forearm, on my right arm, I want to get my grandfather's favorite slogan. He used to say, the key to life, keep and go. So KEEPIN'GO. Mm-hmm. And then on the other arm, enjoy every sandwich. And I kind of feel like those are the twin poles of life. Be, you know, that kind of stoic resolve on one arm, and then the Matt Cause, I did a marathon in Bordeaux on the other one.
Yeah. But it's, and anyone doesn't know, just Google, enjoy every sandwich, said by Warren Zevon on the Dave Letterman show. Only time Letterman had a guest on for the entire show. And it was his sort of, and he knew he didn't have much time to live. And it was his sort of mantra for everyone out there to enjoy every sandwich.
So it's not like you and I, you know, ever took this pod too seriously.
Yeah.
But I'm really happy I have it to come back to, because I was saying to you when I came in, like, I haven't seen you for 9 months. And you and I have been friends for a really long time. We've worked together a lot. I totally missed you. I'll probably still bust your chops, even though secretly I think I see a lot of what you were saying was probably more right than I gave it credit for.
Hate scrolling my Instagram account.
I will still do that.
Yeah.
I will still do that.
There was nothing better than you were in the hospital, I think it was with a family member, and Sandra just showed you her phone, go, oh, look, Matt's having a fine dinner, or something like that.
Yeah, it was one of your famous evening silhouette shots with the bottle of wine. And then there was something, you know, I'm sure you used words like glorious or delicious, delightful. Yeah, that's right. It's funny. You've got a kind of a CBC arsenal of adjectives. It was delightful. NPR kind of thing. We should probably talk a little sports.
Mm-hmm. But hold on, before we do, just real quick, what were some of the highlights, you know, from California, from Germany? I mean, like you and Sandra and your daughter, you know, you picked up and left for a while. That is a rare thing. So just some of the highlights.
Yeah, it's true. I would say probably, geez, it's hard to encapsulate the whole thing. I really, Hollywood is a weird place. You know, I think probably a highlight for me was walking through one of the museums there and seeing the original desk from The Godfather, the one that Don Corleone sits behind in Godfather 1. They had a big exhibition on The Godfather, and it really felt like I was somewhere. It wasn't just that it was away and it was special, but it was like such a big part, like for you too, for a lot of people, like the movie's such a big part of your life. And here I am in the Mecca of movies, and I'm looking at this desk and I'm thinking, God, it's all real. You know what I mean? Like it all happened. You know, it wasn't just in my mind. It's like there was this freaking desk. Marlon Brando sat behind it. Someone yelled action and then cut.
Yeah.
And all that love of movies and storytelling just felt really, really worth it in that moment. That's the best part of California, I think, is that the dreams are like fake, but also real. Mm-hmm. It's complicated, but they're fake and real at the same time. And then actually we went to Prince Edward County, which I know is just down the highway, but I've never been there before. And it was after a long stretch. And it was just really nice to decompress. And it was a beautiful part of Ontario. And I just kind of really understood wine better. You know, like wine made more sense to me. Once again, I thought of you. It was like, I bet Matt knows all these, because like everywhere you go, it's like street signs to get to this vineyard or that vineyard. And I'm thinking there must be a lot of drunk driving going on. But I was like, wow, this is a nice way to live. Like rolling hills and green, and maybe I'll just go sit somewhere and have a sandwich and a glass of wine. Like there was, like, I was never really a stop and smell the roses kind of guy, but I kind of looked around and I thought, wait a minute, roses.
And there are roses at the end of every row of vines, but I'm not going to get into viticulture. I could. But
no, you will.
I will. But you see, but that is part of what I love about wine. It is that atmosphere. It's that lifestyle. It's that decompression. And also, when you're at the vineyard, you feel a sense of ownership, because now you meet the people making the wine, and you see like it's important to their life. And this wine is important because it pays their rent, their mortgage, their kids, you know, university bill. And then you see the stories and these families and the struggles and their passions, and they're part scientist and farmer and marketing and artist and all that wrapped up. And then you buy that bottle and then you drink it and you appreciate it more than just a device to get drunk.
So I'm not a drinker.
Yes.
As you know, but while I was there, I thought, how nice to know a lot about something and to have a passion and to follow it. And so I thought, for our pod, and this is our first big announcement, you're the wine guy.
Yeah.
But I've decided to be the food guy. So as you are to wine, I'm going to try to be to food. I'm learning how to cook better. I'm really trying to appreciate food, the deliciousness, the delightfulness of it. I'm looking for delightful foods, Matt. So that's what we're going to do. You're going to be the wine guy. I'm going to be the food guy. You know how you always give wine pairings for stuff?
Yep.
I'm going to try to do the food equivalent of things.
Well, then you realize then you're going to have to learn more about wine, because if you're going to do pairings, you got to understand the tannins and acidity and why Barbera works with pasta and why Gamay works with a lot of things.
Yeah, I don't need to know that because I don't care. But when I mean pairings, I mean like you pair wine and sports. I'm going to pair food and sports.
Okay.
That's the pairing. So, all right. I talked. You talked. Let's try to give some of the Toronto sports teams a little bit of love here. How about that? But before we do that, I want to talk to you about the Dame Lillard deal, which finally went down, 3-way deal. The Milwaukee Bucks somehow out of the blue, like a hawk plucking a little groundhog out of the field, just came and got Dame Lillard. I never thought it would be Miami. I suspected it might be Toronto and possibly Chicago. Toronto felt like a destination. Before we get into the actual deal, you and I have not talked about this, but we both love the Raptors. So what was your emotional response to the idea that he wouldn't be coming here?
I was devastated. And I understand all the arguments against it. And that if you have Lillard with Siakam and one of Ananobi and Barnes, that might not be enough. And it's true. And maybe he's unhappy and he's older. He gets injured. He's going to be paid $60 million in a couple of years. I know where all the minefields are. I still wanted to walk through that field. Because the Raptors, for the last year or so, they've been the mushy middle. And my big concern is that Masai Ujiri is chasing the ultimate high. For an executive, it's I fleeced the fuck out of that other team. And he did that with the Nuggets against the Knicks. He did that against the Knicks when it was a Raptor. He did that with Kawhi Leonard. And he's searching for it again. And it led to Van Vliet going for nothing. You know, they had a chance to get Lillard. And the fact they didn't, I found just, I was disappointed, because it'd be fun, it'd be new, and the ceiling would be raised.
All right, so there's a lot there to unpack. So let's go back to the mushy middle. Because I think what bothered people about last year's season was not that they underperformed, but they underperformed almost in an exemplary fashion. It was 41-41 season. They couldn't have been more middle. They weren't terrible. They weren't good. And there was a sense of stasis. And around the Raptors, since Masai has come in, there hasn't been that sense of stasis. But over the last 2 or 3 years, there's been this feeling that you're waiting for something to happen, and it's not happening, and stuff is just slowly atrophying.
Well, the swashbuckling of Masai Ujiri. What did he do when he first got here? Playoffs against Brooklyn. Fuck Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know, not afraid to fire Dwayne Casey. The Kawhi Leonard deal. The bye-bye Andre Bargnani. Again, the player that makes me ashamed to be part Italian. Like, where's that guy? Because that guy seems like he's sitting and waiting. And at what point does being patient go from, oh, smart and prudent to, you know, you've hurt the team?
I was thinking about this on the way here, Maddie. The first Messiah that we met was bold and decisive and seemed like a bit of a killer, even though he seemed very friendly. And all the moves you mentioned, you know, the DeMar DeRozan one got everyone's attention for real because DeMar was so loved and he was willing to deal him. Now, of course, it was the smart move. And you and I said from the beginning, this depresses us, but we're glad he did it. He shook things up in a way that a Toronto team hasn't seen in a long time. We thought Brian Burke was going to be that guy with all the bluster and the swagger, like someone who just came in and was undeniable, like Thanos. And I wonder, and here's specifically, do you think he fell in love with that championship team a little bit too much? Is it possible that he's not willing to be that guy with OG and Pascal and Fred and even Kyle, even though Kyle, you know, they knew that was going to end. But do you think it's just that crew?
Well, he does overvalue. You can tell that, like, or I shouldn't say overvalue, but he loves his own players more than any other executives. And I get the idea you don't want to get fleeced yourself and you want to have these guys in high regard. But when it was, oh, no, OG Anunoby, that's a nonstop, that's a non-starter in the Lillard conversation. That kind of amazed me, only because, like, OG Anunoby's a very good player, but I think his ceiling is all-star light. In a year where, let's say, there's a couple forwards that are injured, OG Anunoby gets there. We feel good about it, but, you know, he's not a true star player, while Lillard is.
I think the highest we could hope for OG, and they're not the same kind of player, but in terms of impact, would be Chris Middleton, where he's the kind of guy who's on that all-star bubble on a good team. He's an important contributor. If he was just out there alone, that team would suck. But he can support somebody else who's really, really good. You know, there are two things that I learned from this process. One was, I think Masai really hated Nick Nurse. That one of the reasons that he has this feeling for these players is because he feels like
Nick Nurse did him dirty.
And there's a lot of guys who could be a lot better with somebody else. I don't know if that's true or not, but I bet you Masai believes that's true. And the other thing I learned is people hate Toronto around the league. Like, they say they love it, but the OG package for Portland, the way it was projected, is better than what they actually wound up getting. Now, we'll see what Drew Holiday turns into. We don't know yet. But you can make a pretty good case that Toronto was more competitive than anyone else, if that's the deal they were offering, if they were even looking at Pascal. But if Dame really, really didn't want to come here and that stood in the way, I don't know if that's true or not. But it made me think about Masai's challenge, which is you need superstars to win. Superstars don't want to play in Toronto. Maybe we thought that wasn't true because we won a championship. Maybe we were just reminded, oh yeah, they still hate Toronto.
It's so weird because they like to party here. They like to play here. They like to spend some time here, but they don't want to live here. And I mean, that gets to a bigger structural conversation with the educational system in the States, the isolationism, you know, and maybe you got to convince AAU players that shoveling is cool. I'd also remind a lot of players that Toronto is warmer than Detroit or Minnesota or a lot of other places. But it's been a conversation since Isaiah Thomas popped through the Raptor, the Raptor logo on day one in the mid 90s. And it hasn't changed. I don't think it's going to change. There's always going to be this thing about, oh, I don't want to live in Toronto. Like, it's, and I don't even care from a, why don't you love my city? It really doesn't matter to me if Damian Lillard is paying property taxes in Toronto. Actually, that'd be pretty cool. But it's something I don't think is ever going to change.
It made me think about, I know this sounds really weird, but it made me think about Jared Goff and the 3-1 Lions.
I did not see that coming.
Right. The NFL is amazing in the sense that it doesn't matter what market you're in. It is so big that even small markets can be something that you watch very carefully. Green Bay, Buffalo.
Many years ago, the first game of the NFL season would be a rematch of the last two Super Bowl winning teams. And it was Green Bay versus New Orleans. Could you imagine in the NBA, and I know it happened with Milwaukee, but where the teams that had all the stars in the winning was the New Orleans, what are they, the Pelicans? Are they still the Pelicans?
Yeah, they're the Pels.
The Pelicans versus the Bucks were the two sexy teams in the NBA.
And I think NBA players, as much as we want to rip them for being, they don't understand Canada. I think they do understand business, though. And they know if you want to be seen in the NBA, there's really only about four or five markets that are guaranteed to get you that primo coverage. Now, you can be a great league pass team. Mm-hmm. You can be the fun league pass team. The New Orleans Pelicans with Zion was the fun league pass team. But let's not kid ourselves. If he's playing in Chicago or New York or Los Angeles,
it's bigger.
It's just bigger. The NFL, that's not true.
Yeah.
Like Aaron Rodgers is the biggest name in sports, you know, playing in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. You can't have that. Like Giannis kind of proved that to be a bit different. Kind of. But who would Giannis be if he was playing in New York? Anyway, my point is simply this. Those guys know that the table tilts in the NBA in terms of stardom and clout towards the big markets. And you can't really be a big person unless you're in a big market. So this is just the facts. You know, it made me feel at the end of that long speech like, you know, we got a great championship out of it. It was exciting. Things lined up in a freaky, almost perfect way. But our problems are still our problems.
Oh, no, they've never changed. And now the problems are, what if Siakam, and I'm sure, I don't know if this is the case, what if Siakam is taking it personal that he hasn't gotten this extension yet, being offered to him by Bobby Webster, Masai Ujiri? OG Anunoby is 100% going to be testing free agency. And the Raptors can pay him more because of bird rights, but you know, maybe he wants to go somewhere else. Like, there is a world where all this indecision leads us to hoping that Scotty Barnes takes a leap and who the hell is going to be on the team. Like right now, there are a lot of questions and a lot of uncertainty being a Raptors fan, and that is a new place to be.
There's no place that's worse when you're a fan than purgatory. It's great, you know, sing when you're winning. Mm-hmm. If we're going to suck, then we're compiling draft picks. But, you know, it's the same at work and in life. It is better to be bold and wrong than to be careful and accomplish nothing. And stasis, like, and you've heard all these like anonymous NBA sources, executives around the league saying, oh, the Raptors are just kind of stuck. They don't know who they are and they don't know where to go. There is nothing like, this is just so true in life. The worst times in life, like, are where things are just passing you by, you know, dead time. Mm-hmm. You know, this feels like if you're a fan, it's dead time. Like kind of like there've been long periods with the Jays that have been like this, where you go, you know, I could get really excited about this, but why?
It's like 3:45 in the afternoon on a Saturday. Ooh. You're already done. All the breakfast and the lunch rules and world is done. You've done your morning chores. Now you're waiting for the evening and it's 3:45. You know, like when you were sick from school, there was no shows on at 3:45 back in the day when there was only a limited amount of channels. That's where the Raptors are. It's 3:45 in the afternoon.
Your eyes lit up when you made that analogy because you knew it was a good one. Yeah. But it's, you know, what's one of the funny things about weekends? They're sneaky boring. Mm-hmm. Like, thank God when football finally shows up at 11 a.m. on Sunday and you can start watching 2 hours of a bunch of guys in suits, like just yelling at each other about what they think is going to happen.
You're going to need a pass rush if you want to win in the National Football League.
You know, I think Dallas is going to win if they execute in all phases. Ooh, hot take. I like that. But you're onto something. So if they do everything right, you like their chances of this turning out well.
It's bold.
But seriously, like the 3:45, I would actually park it even earlier, 1:45. And I'll tell you why. Because when we were kids growing up, there was Maple Leaf Wrestling.
Yes.
Right? And then when Maple Leaf Wrestling was over, there was nothing.
Nothing.
So it was like right around 1 o'clock. It's like, shit, no cartoons.
Yeah.
No wrestling. What the hell am I going to do with myself?
No computer, no internet. You've just watched the magnificent Morocco win a match in a very shady fashion. And now you've got the next like 5 hours of dead zone. So, and that's the Raptors.
My daughter, like she's 13, and like all young kids, has grown up not just with the internet, but with social media. There is never nothing to do.
Yeah.
There is never nothing to do. You know what? And I was thinking about this the other day. You know what I used to do when I was bored in my room? Well, some of it I can't say. But I would lie on the back of the bed and put my feet up in the air and balance stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just sit, like spend a half an hour like, how much can I balance on my feet? I don't know what that taught me. Maybe nothing. But I'm pretty sure that TikTok isn't teaching Charlotte anything. Maybe what it taught me is that life kind of stinks. And there's big gaps of nothing. And you got to fill it yourself. Like, you got to fill the void.
And we can get into that conversation another day of how being bored is actually maybe good for our development as adults and worrying about the next generation. We'll save that for another time. You mentioned your daughter. She closer to getting her license than you are, Bob. You haven't been on for 9 months. Have you in the last 9 months got your driver's license? Because right now you're in Vaughan, and I imagine it's not a great commute taking your daughter to school from Vaughan.
So, Matt, and I don't mean this as an insult, but you and Charlotte, you're about the same height. So it's easy to confuse one for the other.
Yeah.
And she sounds just like you talking now about driving. She'll just randomly say, "Dad, I'm going to drive before you."
Good.
And she got behind the wheel of a boat. Mm-hmm. And of course, immediately she went from, how does this stick work, to donuts?
Yeah.
And, you know, we told her the story about how Daddy crashed the jet ski into Uncle Matt's dock.
Yep.
And how no one has ever done that before or since.
Yep.
Almost impossible. Mm-hmm. In the middle of a lake to crash into a dock. Yeah, Matt, I haven't really made good on my promise to drive. I'm not going to lie to you.
More likely, you get your license or you being able to name all the linebackers on the Toronto Argonauts.
Before I die?
Yeah, before you die.
I'm going to say the Argos.
Yeah, I think so.
I tried watching this year.
It's a good year to watch. They're like 11-1.
Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah. You know,
it wasn't brought up in Germany that the Doug Flutie 96 comparisons with the 2023 Argonauts?
It didn't come up. No. The thing I learned about the CFL is that it just reminds me to look forward to the NFL.
Oh.
I'm sorry, Matt, but like, I watched two or three games and honestly, they were even kind of fun, but I just didn't give a shit about the outcomes. Like, even though it said Toronto on the jersey, it's like, I don't care.
By the way, that's fine. As I've said 1,000 times, you know, I'll never participate in why don't you like my sport? It doesn't really matter.
Should we move off Dame then and get right to the NFL? We haven't even talked hockey, but just quickly, your number one story right now going into week 4.
It's Miami-Buffalo. Miami is not as good a team as what we saw against Denver, but if a team scores 70 points, everything else stops. Everything, because it's sports and we love round numbers, but everything stopped when we saw 70, because that's not something we've ever seen. I haven't seen it since like the mid-1960s. So it's Miami's offense versus a very good Buffalo defense. It's, can Josh Allen, can he be home run Josh Allen and beat Miami? Or maybe can he be the guy the last couple of weeks where he's been mostly singles and doubles? Because he tried to be Mr. Home Run against the Jets and they lost. But it's all the storylines involving the Dolphins and the Bills.
I think you made a really good point about, you know, you're a big Brett Favre guy, right?
Yes.
Brett Favre can only be a quote-unquote swashbuckler.
Yeah.
There's a certain kind of person who has to accept that I'm going to shit the bed a lot, but I'm also going to rock the bells a lot. Like, and that's maybe just who Josh Allen is. There's this whole feeling, and it's been going on for years, like every single time, it's like they're training a puppy, you know, like, oh, they learned to pee outside. We're so proud of you, Josh. Like every single time he didn't make an accident during a game, people would applaud him, right? It started off, he's got the big cannon arm, and he's always trying to force things downfield. But the reason you got him is because he has a cannon arm. And you're playing in Buffalo, and once you get to about November, it's cold, it's windy, you just need a big arm. You can't be a J.P. Lossman dink and dunk guy. Like, you just need the arm.
And the fine line that Buffalo has to worry about or deal with here is you have one of the best quarterbacks, but you cannot neuter him. You cannot tell him to be Mr. Singles. Like, some points, it's got to be triples and home runs. Like, the ceiling of the Buffalo Bills means at some point you're going to be scared of that dumb fumble, that dumb interception, but he's also going to roll to his right and throw a 60-yard strike to his left, and the defense will do everything perfectly, and Josh Allen can still beat you. So it's finding that fine line.
This is so true in life. I'm fascinated by this story because I think about this all the time. Is the path to success not making mistakes, or is it maximizing your successes? Mm-hmm. Think about this all the time. If I look at my life, I've made a ton of mistakes, an embarrassingly large number, really. But I was able and not afraid to lean into times when they were good. And it actually kind of carried me. Like, there were lean times, but every once in a while, you find yourself in a place where you're like, I'm going to make the most of this. And you do. And it's sustained me and it's gotten me here. And I kind of feel that way about Josh Allen. Is like, you know, they want him to be, you know, again, Jared Goff. They want him to be responsible. They want him to not get in the way of wins. But maybe he's just better. Like, he'll cost you a couple, but he'll win you more.
Yeah. And that's what he has to be. That he is not game manager. If you make him a game manager, then all the coaches need to be fired.
But what's interesting to me is how in life we kind of do it to ourselves. Like, sometimes the worst thing that can happen is when you start censoring yourself. That when you tell yourself, in order to be successful, I just need to shoot for less. Because then you acquire less. And, you know, this is something I see at work all the time or in people in their personal relationships. I'm fascinated by this idea of like athletes and how they achieve success versus how we all live our lives. And one of the worst things you can do is take everyone's advice that tells you don't try to be yourself as much as you're being. It never leads to good. You have to double down on who you are. There's ways to do it smarter and better, but you can't be someone you're not. And so I'm fascinated, you know, like, Tua is an interesting case because he actually learned how to be himself better. I don't feel like he's changed as a quarterback from the guy he walked in as. Do you?
I think I think with him, one, you got rid of Brian Flores, and his lawsuit against the NFL is looking worse and worse with all the success Mike McDaniel has done. You brought in Tyreek Hill, which changes the offense. He's only been hit three times, like three real hits so far this year. And I think he's grown as a human and as a passer. But a lot of it is better coach, better system around him, and you got him Tyreek Hill. And I think that's played a big part.
Man, Tyreek Hill looks good. Hey, I want to throw out, if I can I just do a quick jump over to the Leafs for a second?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to, you know, you and I are sharing this mic, and I don't know how well it's working, so maybe today's just going to have to be a little shorter.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw out names from the Leafs, and you tell me on a scale of 1 to 10 how compelling this is to make you care about the first 40 games.
Oh, God.
Okay?
Yeah.
Bertuzzi.
6.5, because the Leafs, at one point, Nick Ritchie was the answer as the winger with Austin Matthews. They're going to need to find that guy, but we've seen him. We know who he is. 6.5.
Max Domi.
5. Nice player. I like the idea of one year contract guys, because he's going to be motivated because he wants that next big deal. So that's fascinating. But again, over the first 40 games, it's hard for me, Bob. It's hard for me to go over 6.5.
Power play one.
They were good last year. They were fine last year. First 40 games, four. This is a hard thing. This is going to be the hardest thing for my job and for all of our jobs. And we need to legitimately and sincerely and mean it, find ways to find compelling storylines through 82 games. Hockey is 82 three-hour units of entertainment. And I will not be the guy that goes, nothing matters till the playoffs. That is the biggest challenge.
This sounds like a gag, but it isn't. Austin Matthews and the Hart Trophy.
It's only a fun one because you're allowed, then it's Edmonton and Toronto yelling at each other. But if Connor McDavid is healthy, I don't think Matthews is winning it. You know, I'm interested to see Matthews on the penalty kill. I be careful blocking shots. To me, the most compelling guy is Matthew Nyes because he's young, because he looked good in the playoffs last year, and because he could represent the future. So Matthew Nyes and his development, at the very least, that's something different.
I wish I could agree with you there about Matthew Nyes. But I feel a little Nick Robertson burned. And here's what I mean by that. All the smart fans and the smart chroniclers of the team for a couple of years were like, oh, Nick Robertson, he's knocking on the door. Oh, he's going to be something. And, you know, should we call him up for the playoffs? What's he going to do? You know what? He's fine. He might be an NHLer. Maybe. Let's find out. So I feel a little bit burned by that Toronto thing, which is, you know, like Matthew Nyes is a kid. Like Timothy Liljegren. Same kind of thing where you're like, oh, who is, like, I started chronicling in my mind all the names that seemed like such a big deal. And now that they're gone, it's like, why did we care? Travis Dermott.
Yeah.
Justin Hall. Mm-hmm. Alex Kerfoot. We spent so much psychic capital wondering, how do we get the most out of these players without just saying to ourselves, they're fine. They're fine. They're never going to be much better than this.
Then really the big question then for this year is, can Nylander be a center? Can he be that consistently? What does that mean for Tavares? How is different is Tavares's role at even strength? Those are really the big questions. The Leafs defense is good. It's not great. It's good. I'm fine with the goaltending. You know, I feel fairly comfortable with it. And, you know, everything comes down to, can you score more than 1 to 2 goals in games 5, 6, and 7 in a playoff series?
Which is pretty much where the team was left last year. You know what I'm thinking with the Leafs, what I care about, is can it be fun to watch them again? And I don't mean fun in terms of the narrative of the playoffs and 1967 and the burdens of, you know, how this team has done so poorly in the play. Like,
you have to take memory away.
Can you just remove memory and say they're really talented? Like, do you remember that feeling when Austin Matthews debuted and he had the big game, 4 goals, and it was just thrilling to watch him score in his opener, and there was this sense of excitement. And then Mitch Marner would do really cool stuff, and you'd be like, God, is he ever talented? Like, can we just divorce narrative and watch them play hockey and say, you know, Brian Burke, to his credit, used to say, you know, kind of like out of that Pat Quinn school, my job is to win, but it's also to have us win in a way that's worth watching. And the smart fan is like, well, I don't care. I just want to see the wins. But like, that's a bit joyless. Like, do you really want to watch a team just grind their way to a 3-2 win? Like, I want to watch fun hockey.
Well, then you're in luck, because you will. The problem is to say, can you eliminate emotional baggage from the past and memory? That's like saying you've been married for 20 years. Can you react to each other like it's your second date? And you can't, because things have changed. You know, the relationship is very, very different. It has to be very different. That's the problem. By the way, shout out to Brian Burke, who never changes his look. At the PWHL, at their first inaugural draft, he still had a tie. It wasn't tied up. His hair was slicked back like the father from Teen Wolf. Like, he looked the exact same, whether he was running the Penguins, general manager of the Maple Leafs, or now in charge of the union for the Professional Women's Hockey League. Brian Burke, his look doesn't change. Good for him for that.
There's a couple things you can count on in hockey.
Yeah.
That's one of them. Mm-hmm. Mike Babcock. And his personality, I think, is one of them.
Yeah.
I was watching on TikTok the other day, somebody doing a funny impersonation of him, and he kept saying, well, you know, Dregs. Yeah. Like, Dregs wasn't part of the bit.
But you gotta
say Dregs.
But that's your vocal reset. If you're going to do Mike Babcock, the word Dregs, you know, it just works. Okay, hold on a second. Parking the Leafs for a moment. I still don't do the TikTok thing. Is it because of Charlotte and just you being more around the world of teenagers?
Nah, you know, I'm working as a producer on a show, and you can't not promote with this stuff.
I'm not saying this as judgment or anything. I'm just saying I just still haven't dipped my toe in it.
I haven't found anything interesting yet, but I'm hoping something's out there. And I'm being very judgmental because, you know, I'm not a millennial, and it's what the millennials do, so I judge them. But also, if I'm honest about TV over the years, there's been a lot of pretty bad TV. Like, for every Cheers, there's a Hello Larry. Mm. So, you know, maybe 5 Hello Larrys. By the way, did you see the reboot of Night Court?
No.
You wouldn't like it.
No.
I'm going to say right now, Matt.
No.
Do not do.
Too many people have died. Too many. The original cast have died on that show. Young, by the way. Very young. That's going to depress me. No, I'm not watching the reboot of that. It's like I never watched the reboot of Magnum PI. If you don't have Zeus, Apollo, and Higgins, I'm out of here. I'm sorry. You need to have them there. I don't watch any of the reboots.
All right. So what show are you into right now? One of the things I wanted to talk to you about, because one of the things we didn't do enough last year is we didn't do enough movie and TV analysis. Now, I know for a sports pod, everyone's like, yay, can we go back to talk about John Klingberg? Sorry. We're movie and TV nuts. So yeah. What have you seen in the last few months that's good?
I haven't seen a ton because, again, you know, I was traveling for a while. I've been enjoying, and I can't pronounce it, the last Star Wars one, Ashakora. I've watched the first bunch of episodes. I've enjoyed that. Season 3 of Only Murders in the Building is fantastic. I really enjoyed that. Barry. I've been watching Barry. And that's been enjoyable. So I've been watching shows that a lot of them that have been around for a while.
Okay, so Barry, you know what? There's so many shows. Sometimes you have to go back and, you know, you can't watch them all at once.
No.
Only Murders in the Building, I agree. I think season three is the runt of the litter so far. But I'm shocked to hear myself say this sentence. Boy, Selena Gomez is good.
Yeah.
She's great.
Yeah.
And then the Anoushka.
Sure.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm going to try to watch it, but I feel like I've been so burned by Star Wars on TV lately. Like, I'm starting to not care, which is another sentence I didn't think I'd ever say, but I'm not caring about Star Wars or Marvel. And I'm thinking, how do we get here? Because that was about 30% of my brain 2 years ago.
Maybe it just peaked. Everything has a run. Everything, you know, Marvel had its run and now it's over. I still haven't seen Oppenheimer. I'm hoping to correct that in the next couple of days. I really want to see, Oppenheimer. It's mostly just been like TV shows that were popular years ago and sports. That's mostly been me.
I recommend Abbott Elementary.
Uh-huh. I heard good things.
It's charming.
Yeah.
It's kind of old fashioned. I think you might like it cause you're old fashioned.
Yeah.
You have, actually, you don't use the BlackBerry anymore, do you?
Well, no, only because it broke.
Right. Oh, okay. Only because. So it's a bit like your old BlackBerry.
Mm.
Like, it just feels like this should be out of date, but it isn't.
By the way, it needs to be said, nothing has changed with you. Like, I texted you earlier this morning to go, hey, Bob, just check in what time you're coming. I got no text back. And then I got a phone call because you were buzzing in to come up here. And then you announced you forgot your phone. Who the hell forgets their phone?
You know, Matt, I've learned a lot about myself over the last 9 months. And one of the things is I'm not as reliable as I thought I was. I'm a bit of a flake. You know, you once said this to me that it used to amuse you. You are steady and even in all things. As you apply yourself to one thing, so you do to another. At work, at play, you're always Matt.
Yeah.
I have wild variants. Bob at work is Oppenheimer. I am obsessed with detail. I am a madman. I'll work on it for 48 straight hours if I have to. Bob in life is basically a goldfish.
Okay, a goldfish.
A goldfish. Like, I don't remember anything. You used to laugh at me that my desk at work used to be nothing but half-finished water bottles and Post-it notes.
We, by the way, brought up yesterday, former OTR staffer Chris Hunick and I were talking about that because I was telling him, hey, I'm doing the pod. Bob is back. I think within seconds, he made some joke about Post-it notes.
I used to love those Post-it notes. And empty styrofoam containers from lunch. And I do mean containers. I remember Landsberg would get me lunch and he would come back and he could barely hold it and he would get all the entrees in one container. He would order every entree.
Also needs to be said on the flake factor. I mean, you and Michael were just like Wonder Twins connect. I called him once and chatted with him for a minute. He's like, Matt, do you mind if I call you back? 6.5 months later, I saw him at Carlo Koliakovo's 40th birthday. And the first thing Michael said to me was, I didn't call you back, did I? So good for him. He remembered, but he was still maximum flake.
Well, and it's funny because Michael's a genius. I'm convinced that even though we don't have the numbers, he's probably an actual genius. His brother is like the head of kidney transplant in BC. Yes. They're just but Michael like knew all of Gene Mack's stats. You know, like if he's interested in it, he can memorize anything.
Yeah.
If he's not interested in it, less.
Last baseball thought, or last sports thought on the Blue Jays. So they win yesterday, and they'll probably at the very least lose their way into the playoffs. Remember we were talking before about if you remove emotion and memory. If you do that with the Blue Jays, and I tell you, this Toronto team in the hardest division in baseball is 17 games over 500 and has the fourth best record in the American League playing in the toughest division in all of baseball. You'd probably go, oh, wow, that's a good season, maybe even really good. And yet me, like most other Jays fans, I've been so annoyed with this year. I hate watch so many at-bats. You know, the Manoah thing, just, again, the greatest sin is not failure. It's not trying. But like, it's so weird. If you just look at the basic numbers of the Blue Jays, you would like go, oh, pretty good year. But then you throw in emotion and history and you have a different impression.
So this is so weird about sports, but it actually, performance obviously matters, but narrative is everything. If I give you player A, and player A is pretty good and gets a baseline of stats, and then player B is very good but underperforming and gets exactly the same stats, you love player A and you hate player B. Now, money obviously factors in because players can be overpaid, but even take the money out of it. Like when we were kids and we didn't know what anyone made, you still didn't like player B because he should be better.
Yeah.
Like this whole idea of should be or unfulfilled potential, not trying is the greatest sin. And then not trying is a kissing cousin, is just adjacent to you're not as good as it could be. Because there's this idea that if you have the talent, you should always maximize it. And that's not true. It's funny, like some people are able to do it consistently. Like Jim Thome hit 20 home runs every year for 20 years, you know, wound up with 600 in the Hall of Fame, never winning the home run title or really even being close. Like some people have that incredible level of consistency. But most of us and athletes, there's peaks and valleys. We hate peaks and valleys. Scott Galloway, who I listen to all the time, he's a business guy, and he says one of the mistakes people make when it comes to their own market value is you look at your best year and you think that's who I am.
Yeah.
How many times have you heard in sports, oh, if he can just play to his top level, he'll be a great player. Yeah, but if he could always play to his top level, that would be his middle level.
Then he's Barry Bonds. What it's about, it's about expectation management. I stand in a line. You tell me it's going to take 10 minutes and then it takes 10. I'm fine. I stand in a line and you tell me it's only going to take 5 minutes, but it takes 7. I'm now angry. Now, I've waited in line number 2 for actually 3 minutes less than line number 1. But you set my expectations and emotionally I've calibrated myself to this and I'm fine. It's the same thing with like with Vlad or Manoah. It's about expectation management.
Well, the funny thing about Manoah is he sucked, right?
Yeah.
So you can look at that and say, well, that's shit. And it is. But Vladdy, if I say to you, did Vladdy just, you know, bark out from the back because we're sharing a mic. So did Vladdy, is he having a bad year?
He's having a fine year.
That's exactly it. He's having a good year. Like, look around MLB and look at what Vlad's delivering. He's a good Major League Baseball player, but we want him to be excellent. Mm-hmm. And he's shown us that he can be. But maybe that was just his best year. Maybe that was the year where he made the most money. Maybe that was the time he went to the bar and got the prettiest girl. Sometimes everything rolls in your favor, but not always. And maybe he's just not that guy. And we're not satisfied with that answer.
But I don't think he would be either, because at like the age 22, he was runner up to Ohtani in the MVP. And now like the difference between Ohtani is when the Jays lost the first game against the Yankees, the bases were loaded because King had walked the first two batters and then 3 straight balls to Vlad. Then at that 2 years ago, you tell me bases loaded 3-0, Vlad going up against a pitcher who's having some control issues. I'd be like so excited going, you're fucked, Yankees. And when I watched that at bat, which he 3 straight strikes that he watched and he struck out, I just watched it with like my hands over my eyes going, don't screw up, don't screw up. That's the difference.
Well, it's true, but maybe it's the more common story in sports is the person who shows a lot of promise and then doesn't deliver on it. Think about pitching in baseball. You got your Scherzers, you got your Verlanders, Chris Sale, any number of guys who have put together great seasons over a number of times. But what happens more often when you look at the end of the year and see who your top 10 pitchers are, a lot of them you don't really hear from again.
Yeah.
In fact, I would argue most of them you don't hear from again. Not in any meaningful way. Like they might win 19 games 1 year and then they wind up averaging out at 13 for the next 5. You know, they might strike out 270 guys 1 year, but then they drop down to 200. You know, that is a much more consistent story because people figure you out, or sometimes you're just on a heater. There's a lot of reasons why it's impossible to, or near impossible to sustain excellence. And maybe Vladdy just doesn't have that. Now, that determines how much he should be paid or how much, you know, emphasis should be placed on his position in the team regarding winning, but it doesn't mean he's not a good player. Like, maybe he's just a good player that we're disappointed didn't turn. We were told, you know, remember when Steven Stamkos was drafted? It was Vinny LeCavalier in Tampa Bay. And they put a big, Lightning management put a big billboard on the highway that said, hockey's Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to sell him. And Vinny LeCavalier, by any metric, had a great career. You know who he's not? Michael Jordan. But we were told he was. So we're let down. It's funny. I want to come back, and I know we're kind of wrapping here, but it goes back to kind of a theme throughout the pod, which is narrative worth it? Because narrative is the worst thing about sports. It makes you care too much. It makes you care too little. It lies to you. It tells you what happened yesterday matters today. If I could just watch it and enjoy the game, it would be so much more enjoyable than having to, you know, in Toronto, we know all about this, right? We talked about Masai. Masai used to do this. Why is he doing this now? Well, it doesn't matter what he used to do. It only matters what he's doing today, except we bring narrative to it. But it's the only thing that makes it interesting.
It's what makes it the highest level. Like, narrative at its, but narrative is the worst, but also narrative is the best, because when it pays off, that high is much better. You're more emotionally invested when narrative is there. If you can do this without narrative, it's kind of cowardly, because you just get to enjoy it, and you just get to enjoy the life is just singles and doubles. But with narrative, it's strikeouts, but it's also grand slam home runs.
So think about a phrase that I understand, but I don't use and I don't necessarily love, is when you're with somebody and you call them my partner. I don't judge it. I get it. But it feels like in a romance, like, partner only covers part of it. Like, partner assumes that you have a plan worked out and the two of you work efficiently towards that goal.
It's like you less relationship, more your 401k.
Yeah. And, you know, like, that's a big part of life and I get it. And the idea of partnership and we're working together on something, but you know what it kind of leaves out? It's fucking nuts being with someone. It is nuts. It is the craziest, stupid thing you could ever do. Why don't I tie myself to this one person and absorb everything that's wrong with them and have them get in the way of a million things I wanted to do and, like, try to navigate a gazillion, you know, coral reefs as I try to dock my boat. Like, and yet at the same time, without that, like, what's it worth? Because the other side is like, think about how amazing it is and all the things that you get. That's a bit like being a sports fan. It really is like a relationship you have with the team. Like, we're not partners with the team. We have a crazy fucking romance with teams. And without it, like, without narrative, why bother?
Yeah. We fell in love with Vlad from 2 years ago. Now it's in a rocky patch. We fell in love with Masai from the day he arrived until a couple of years ago. And now we're in a rocky patch, and the highs are great and the lows stink, but, you know, that's why we're sports fans.
I think that one of the things that's nice about sports is that it's one of the few places where we can be irrational. You've always said this, yes. Right? You've always said this. And, you know, it's funny because the modern sports fan, and I'm not against it, but it is a bit of a double-edged sword. The fan that's just trying to figure out what's going to happen. Well, you don't know. That's the whole point. Like, honestly, there's this criticism of the analytics crew, which is, well, if you have all the stats and you can predict what's going to happen, why do you watch the game? Like, what value is it of to you? Like, if you're just trying to figure out how's it going to end, you know, the joy of it is being surprised, and the torture of it is being disappointed, and yelling is an important part of it. It seems stupid, but of course it's stupid. Like, why? Like, God, I mean, trust me, I work for the world's biggest tech company. The world needs more irrational.
Yes.
We have plenty of rational. We have plenty of everything's been systematically designed to get us to an endpoint that works with the minimum amount of energy expended. We need a little crazy.
And that's the great thing about sports. It allows you to be crazy, but the stakes aren't as high. You know, I don't want, as I always say, I want the parents to be rational for the most part. I want my air traffic controllers to always be rational. And I want my football fan to sometimes just yell and scream and curse to the heavens.
Okay, so as we wrap up, as promised, I'm going to have a food suggestion for food pairing for the Leafs the upcoming season. But do you have a wine suggestion for Leafs fans? As the season starts, a wine that kind of makes you think of the Leafs.
Ooh, okay. So like the wine would have to be, okay, the Leafs are incredibly familiar. So you need to find a way to take that familiar and find something new and exciting. You know what I'm going to go with? I'm going to go with South African Cabernet Sauvignon. Everyone knows Cabernet Sauvignon. It's the most popular red grape, and you probably drink it from California, or maybe you get some cheaper versions from South America. But my suggestion is go and try South Africa. It's still going to give you a lot of the body that you want and the tannins, but the flavor profile will be a bit different. It'll be a little more red fruit driven. So it's the same grape, but it's going to be a bit of a different take on it. So just the first one off the top of my head, Maple Leafs, Stellenbosch, Cabernet Sauvignon.
All right. My food suggestion is it's an Italian appetizer. It's, I don't know what the name is for it, but it's celery with anchovy. And basically you just take little pieces of celery, right? And lay in that groove an anchovy and just crunch down on it. Now, I know you're thinking maybe this is nuts. I hate this. I don't want to do it. Okay. Celery is never exciting by design.
Yes.
It is like the Leafs' regular season. It doesn't, when you see celery on a plate, what do you think?
I know exactly what's going
to
happen.
It's just designed to get you to the entree. To make it look like there's more there than there actually is.
It's designed to make you feel good about the chicken wings you're about to eat.
Right? But it doesn't matter in and of itself. But you take anchovy, which is something that you either love and it's kind of people, you know, or you've never really tried it. But you put the two together and the crunch of the celery combined with the spicy, the saltiness of the anchovy go together so shockingly, amazingly well that you can remember that you actually love celery. Deep down in your heart, you love it. You're just bored as shit of it. That's the Leafs.
I love it. That's a perfect analogy. And usually this is the point where we're both searching for the joke to end the pod. And then I say goodbye, you say goodbye, Ferris Bueller, and we end it. But I'm not even going to do it. That is a perfect analogy. The celery, the sardine with the Maple Leafs. Bob, I love you. I've missed you. I'm glad to have you back here. I'm glad to do the pod. I promise the technical stuff will get fixed because I'm going to be raging over why the hell the other mic wasn't working and other issues with Audacity. And as you know, I'm not good with technology, so it's going to take me a bit.
I think it's so funny that our first pod back, we had 9 months to prepare for, and we wound up sharing a mic. And it probably sounds like hell. It's like everything you loved about us and everything you hated all in one.
Oh, I want to do it. Wait, what's the line? I think it's Bruce Springsteen when they're doing the Do They Know It's Christmas? Thank God it's them instead of you.
I believe that was Bono. It was Bono. And since we're talking about tradition and new and what we keep, should we just end it this way?
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.